welcome to our very first ever episode, the first official episode of Checking the Gate, a film and religion podcast. I'm Robert Wright-Stasko, and joining me is my co-host, Mike Patty.
Hello.
Hello.
Good
Mike.
Good to be here.
Mike, why don't you tell us about yourself?
My name is Michael M. Patty. I have 2 degrees, one in English and one in film and digital media. I'm a member of American Mensa, and I have a lifelong passion for film, and I'm happy to be co-hosting so I can talk about it.
Yes, and you're also a member of Mensa, which means you're smarter than me.
It's all subjective.
Yes, it's a sliding scale. I'm on the low end of the curve. Let's see. My name is Robert Wright-Stasko. I have a bachelor's degree in arts and religion. I have also worked as a manager in Blockbuster for over 8 years until just very recently. I won't whinge and moan about that. That's for another kind of podcast.
You're better off.
Yeah. Yes, definitely am.
And as Robert complimented me about being smarter than him, I will return the favor and say since he worked at Blockbuster, he has probably seen more movies than me.
Yeah.
And that's a feat.
Yeah,
that's saying
a lot
something.
More bad movies, that's for sure. Some of
I
which,
wasn't going to go there, but yes.
Yeah, some of which we will be looking at in our podcast and in future episodes.
Look forward to it.
Yes, it'll be fun. But anyways, this is a film and religion podcast, and some people are wondering, what is film and religion? Well, it's a small subgenre, which has been slowly growing over the past 3 decades. See our FAQ page at www.ctgpodcast.com, where you can find some more books like Screening the Sacred, Film and Religion, An Introduction, and another book called Religion and Film, An Introduction. Don't get them confused. There's some other podcasts, like the SQPN podcast, which is like a Catholic take on movies like Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings. And they're quite fun. The moderator of that he's Swedish, I think, and he has a very fun accent, so check that one out. These are on our links and FAQ pages. So our take on the subject would be, rather than looking at religious references in this movie or that one and saying, oh, isn't that cool? Look, Jesus is in a movie. You know, we're going to look at these films and see what they tell us about prevailing secular thought in our society. In other words, what do these movies tell us about the filmmaker's thought on religion in general? And then we'll look at the reaction to these movies in critical reviews and popular culture to see if the filmmaker's views confirm popular opinion or run contrary to it. So our first movie is Avatar.
The highest grossing feature film to date.
Of all time.
I don't know how far into the future you folks will be listening to this. It's currently 2011, so it may not be.
We were recording this on May 21st, so
yeah.
The end could come at any time.
Yes, the rapture was predicted to be today by a leading conservative radio host. So may all be in heaven by the time this airs.
Well, did you see the lady who decked out her car?
I did not.
Yeah, like front and side and back with a big bullhorn on the top. Yeah, the end is coming. May 21st, 2011.
Yeah. So,
we
better hurry. We'd better get this done.
Yeah, yeah.
Just in case.
Yeah. I was worried about April 21st, which according to the Sarah Chronic Chronicles was going to be Judgment Day with the machines.
No,
stuff.
It's still August 29th.
Oh, August 29th?
Yeah. TV lies.
They keep changing.
Yeah.
Anyways, our first movie today is Avatar. You know, we picked this because, as Mike said, it was the highest grossing movie of all time. A lot of people have seen it, and there's been a lot written about it, but I know Mike is still wondering why we're doing this as a film and religion.
I was not a fan of this film. I have actually seen it twice. I saw it in 3D shortly after it came out just to see what all the fuss was about, and I have since seen it again on Blu-ray just to see if maybe not seeing it in 3D would help at all, and the best I can say about it is that's 5 hours of my life I'm not getting back.
This movie has religious connotations to it just on the surface.
Exactly. And I think that's part of one of the reasons, in addition to not liking it, that I'm wondering why it was so popular. It seemed it was all superficial to me, and I'm wondering if maybe we can help shed some light on if there are underlying themes to it.
Yeah, they're definitely, because you can look at the Na'vi and you see, like Phil Martin said, you know, did you see the Vedic references in the movie? Well, maybe Cameron planted them just for you. He made the Na'vi the color of the Sri Krishna. He says it's a big, dumb movie built to make money, but hardly worthy of serious examination. Avatar isn't only critic-proof, it resists serious criticism. You might as well analyze a beach ball. Well, we're gonna put his little statement to the challenge and see if we can look at this movie seriously. Is it a message movie or a beach ball? What do you think, Mike?
I'm voting beach ball.
Okay.
I'm voting that it was the whole point of making this movie, and part of the reason it has such a thin plot that somehow takes 2.5 hours to tell. And that's the theatrical version. That's not there's an extended version that's longer than that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, guy goes to another planet to start over, and he does. and along the way, the people he came with turn out to be bad, and he turns against them. Yeah. He revolts against his own people.
Well, I think that part right there is where the movie gets interesting, where it's holding a mirror up to our society, especially American society, and our kind of obsession with consumerism.
Please explain how a movie about an outsider turning native and leading a revolution is reflective of current events and not a retread of about 100 other movies.
Well, it certainly is a retread of 100 other movies, and I won't argue that point. It's basically, I think it was Edward R. Burroughs' book, Princess of Mars, is basically the plot of this movie. Matt Dillon from the Sci-Fi Guys podcast called it Smurfahontas. And that's, when you think about it, that's exactly what it is. But the added element we have here is searching for the unobtainium, which is stolen too.
Yes, that's a Rocky and Bullwinkle reference, if I'm correct.
I actually watched that episode of Rocky and Bullwinkle and was like, gah! Totally unoriginal all around.
Hey, Rocky, want to see me pull a reference out of my hat? James Cameron, that trick never works.
It never worked. And I think this is what made this soap opera, especially overseas, was its critical look at, you know, the American need to come in wherever they want, take whatever they want, and run away with it. This is where the religion sort of comes into it, where we have, for the past several hundred years, we've been living in a very secular age where religion has sort of been taken out of the public square.
We are living in a material world?
Exactly. We're definitely living in a material world, and I am a material girl.
I learned something new today.
But I was watching a movie called Lord Save Us From Your Followers, where it was a Christian was taking a hard look at where Christianity is doing and what's been saying and where it's going. And he talked to one guy who said, materialism and consumerism is going to kill Christianity within 20 to 30 years.
And when did he say this?
This movie came out last year. So.
Okay.
So, I mean, people have always been predicting the end of Christianity as long as they've been predicting
the end of the world.
The end of the world. I think this movie it serves as a warning. I'm not saying this movie is good science fiction, but good science fiction should cast a light on our current ways of thinking and the end consequences of what that's going to happen. Right now, we're rolling into countries and planting McDonald's and Walmarts and saying, you know, our lifestyle is the way your lifestyle should be. And they try to do that to the Na'vi. You know, they roll in and try and teach them English, and they don't care. You know, the Jake Sully says, you know, there's nothing we have that they want, so we're just going to roll in and take whatever we want, and we're justified in doing so. And it's a very thin veil. The movie kind of preaches it to you.
I have to jump in and make my counter-argument. I think maybe you're overanalyzing it, and we are looking at a beach ball and not a painting. And if that message is there, first of all, I'm not convinced it needed to be hammered home as bluntly. It's a little bit of a sledgehammer in the film. Everything you're saying is valid, that, you know, let's take what we want, screw everybody who stands in our way. Yes, that's the plot of the movie. I'm not sure it necessarily has to do with America, specifically. I'm also not sure that it's not just to keep the plot moving. The point of the movie is that he can make a 3D movie and realistic green screen aliens. I'm not sure the point of the movie is that consumerism is taking over.
Yeah.
I think all of that's, you know, it had to have some plot. You know, he couldn't just have motion capture aliens standing in front of the screen waving at the audience. There had to be conflict, and what better way to do it than the retread of 100 movies? Guys come in and try and take something, and they stand in the way.
Yeah.
Yes, part of that has to do with them having their own religion. I really think that's just to serve the story. I'm not sure there is any deeper message in a movie from James Cameron, who also gave us Aliens, which has the exact opposite, quote-unquote, message.
Yeah.
That movie's all about going in and shooting and asking questions later. And those are the good guys.
Is this
going
to be another stand-up fight, sir? Or just another bug hunt?
I'm going to sit here and fight you.
I think where the interesting sort of clash of ideologies happen is when Grace comes in and talks to Giovanna Ribisi's character.
Yeah.
And is explaining the hard science of the mysticism of the Na'vi people. And it's quite interesting how her character, you know, she turns into a true believer. And in the end, she's taken up into the home tree, which is sort of like the Na'vi heaven or Nirvana or whatever. I think it's interesting when, even when given like a hard scientific, tangible faith that you could touch and feel and see and not just have to believe in and take on faith. He's still like, he laughs her off and is like, oh, you know, what have you people been smoking out there? And
yeah.
That I look at and see, have we as modern people been jaded so much that even when given some a sort of real faith that we could look at and see, we wouldn't even accept that because it's so far beyond what we know. Well, judging by some of the reaction to this movie, you know, there's some people who see that and would like that, like this CNN article I have. It's called "Audience Experience Avatar Blues." Mike just looked this over, and you know, I wanted to ask you what you thought about this. According to this CNNarticle.com, someone posted, "When I woke up this morning after watching Avatar for the first time yesterday, the world seemed gray. It was like my whole life, everything I've done and worked for, lost its meaning. It just seems so meaningless. I still don't really see any reason to keep doing things at all. I live in a dying world." Another poster was like,
he does realize that the Earth doesn't die for another couple of hundred years in the movie, right?
Yeah. You know, I could say my depression was twofold. I was depressed because I really wanted to live in Pandora, which seemed like such a perfect place. But I was also depressed and disgusted at the sight of our world, that we, what we've done to Earth. I so much wanted to escape reality, this person
Wow.
said. Yeah.
All I have to say to these people is, first of all, that's what DVD and Blu-ray is for. Second, go to a doctor, get yourself some uppers, and watch some other movies. You know, there are about a million other beautiful movies that have crisp, breathtaking CGI visuals in them.
Or you can go, like, old school and watch the original Richard Donner Superman.
There you go.
Beautiful, awesome blues. That movie's spectacular on Blu-ray.
Flying through space scene in 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Oh, yeah.
Where Dave is being taken into the monolith to become the Star Child. Looks excellent in high def. I would say to these people that I'm sorry that they're focusing just on one film. I'm glad they liked it. They seem to have enjoyed it more than me. But I don't know why they feel that life is just what's depicted in a movie. Life is what you make of it. I believe that message is also in Avatar.
Yeah.
That you must do what you think is right, of course.
Yeah,
you know, that's what Sully did, and Grace, and get busy living or get busy dying.
I think that, you know, some people are just so grounded to this life that they've lost all mystery and wonder, and they need a movie to provide that for them. And when, you know, you have a movie which, you know, you have to admit, this movie did look really good.
No, I don't. I saw it in 3D.
You saw it in 3D and in 2D. Did the 3D enhance this movie at all?
Not. The subtitles. I really liked how the subtitles looked like they were floating in front of the screen. It looked like it gave it depth, like it was color forms placed over a board. That's the best way I have to describe it. where it wasn't just a flat picture. But I want to see stuff coming off the screen. That is what I think 3D and getting my money's worth out of the ticket should be. Especially after all, what was it, 12 years it took to make it?
Yeah.
And the money that was spent and developing the new cameras. That's what I was expecting, seeing stuff flying in front of the plane. And except for the subtitles, I didn't get that.
Yeah.
So I actually thought seeing the brighter, prettier Blu-ray was a much better viewing experience. I didn't enjoy the plot anymore, though.
The 3D didn't make it more lifelike or more real to you, like, this is an actual place, I want to...
Not in the least.
It didn't make you want, like, some of the people in this CNN article kill themselves and be reborn on Pandora.
No, I am not a Cylon.
No. Actually, it's kind of close to Mormon beliefs, where they believe that when they die, if they've done enough, been good enough, and followed all the rules, that they would be reborn on another planet and be like a ruler patriarch over this other planet. So it's not so far out a crazy belief.
In other words, somebody else thought of the crazy first.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I've had this conversation with my wife. You know, I've taken not to criticizing other people's crazy belief, because as a Christian, I believe a man died, came back to life, and is alive right now. So, you know, if I go around saying, oh, that's crazy, someone's going to turn around and tell me how crazy I am.
a biographical note for our listeners. I was raised Catholic, but I do not worship a zombie.
Yes, and neither do I. See? And that's what makes this such an interesting podcast. Just for the record, Jesus is not a zombie. My Lord is so much more than that.
I like zombies.
What does Hermes say?
God rest his zombie bones.
Yes. Well, anyway, we might tackle Futurama on our TV corner in a future episode. But
yeah, they had a couple religious episodes.
Yeah, and that'll be fun to look at. But on today's TV corner, we're going to finish up our Doctor Who discussion from our preview episode, if any of you heard that. So now to the TV corner. And here's our TV corner, and today we're going to be talking about Doctor Who. And on our preview episode, we talked about the first two episodes, and how we're kind of disappointed.
In season six.
In season six, and at the time of this recording,
two more episodes,
The Curse of the Black Spot and The Doctor's Wife. I was saying I was not looking forward to The Curse of the Black Spot, and totally got what I expected.
Yeah, me too. I'm not a big fan of pirate stuff to begin with, and it clearly seemed like this one was phoned in to bridge the all-out two-parter, which was, I thought, phenomenal, and then the Neil Gaiman written episode, which was supposed to be phenomenal and the best hour since the Doctor has come back. It was kind of like how they used to do the Doctor Light episodes in seasons 2, 3, and 4. Only this one seemed like it was a writer light episode. You know, they're on a ship and they get a black mark and they're instantly poofed away and the Doctor has to try and stop them. Only this time he's unsuccessful because it turns out the bad guy's really good. And, you know, whatever. Yeah. And look, they're in space the whole time.
Pirates in space.
Yeah. I don't want to go off on a rant here, but one of the reasons I don't care for pirates in media nowadays is because every time pirates are depicted, they're always pirates with a heart of gold. They never steal anything. They never kill. They never plunder, which is all pirates did in real life.
Yeah, they weren't nice people.
You never see bad pirates, I hate it.
They didn't look like Johnny Depp.
No.
Even though they try and ugly him up, he still looks, you know, like a leading man. And
true story, none of the castaways from where Fletcher Christian and the other mutineers went to shore, none of the real descendants look like Clark Gable.
Well, yeah, let's put the nail in that coffin. And Doctor's Wife. I enjoy The Doctor's Wife.
I did not. I thought it was your typical, and I'll let Robert explain why he liked it, because I think he can expound a little better on that if he goes second. I want to explain why I didn't like it. It just seemed like absolutely nothing. There was no tension at all. Oh, look, the TARDIS is in an actual person. That's a novel concept. I wonder if she's going to end up back in the box by the end of the episode. Oh, look, Rory and Amy are being chased around the TARDIS by an evil computer you can't actually see. I wonder if they're going to be okay. Oh, look, there's Rory dying again. I wonder if that's just a fake-out. Yeah. And, of course, it ended exactly the way you think it's going to.
Yeah. Well, I liked it because it was a throwback to the old episodes where, you know, you have a whole episode where they're running down the same corridor. And, you know, come on, you gotta love that. It's cheesy and it's hokey, but it's like, yes, they're running down the corridor. You know, I haven't seen that in 5 years, you know.
Glad you enjoyed that.
And then the beginning of the episode where the box, I had a proper geek out. A glee fit on that, a squee, as some people would say, because that was what the doctor used in the War Games, the Patrick Troughton doctor.
Saw that. Refresh my memory.
He's like, oh, I have to contact the Time Lords. They're the only people who can stop these War Games. And he pulls out these sides of a box.
Oh,
he,
you're right.
He puts it together with his mind, and you see the box come together.
And then it disappears.
It flies off. That's the distress call, and that's what the, what was it called?
I don't remember. Yeah. Oh, Michael Sheen.
Yeah, Michael Sheen. I thought it was going to be Hugh Laurie. House. They keep talking about House. But, yeah, he had all these distress beacons, and that was like,
You're right.
Like old school doctor as the MacGuffin. And I was like, yes. So you could tell Neil Gaiman was a hardcore fan. And he got the personality of the TARDIS right. And, you know, because they've always...
Yes, I don't discount that. That was spot on. I give a lot of credit to that lady for being able to deliver all of that fast-paced dialogue. And to Neil Gaiman for... Well, I like biting. It's like kissing, only there's a winner.
Yeah.
I remember that line. And I thought that the TARDIS personification was good. But that's really the only thing... You know, the plot of the episode left much to be desired.
Yeah, I have to enjoy the actress.
I think it's Surlee Jones.
I enjoyed her performance, and I thought it was great. To get back to the religion subject, my prediction on where this whole season is headed is the person or the entity that is driving the plot forward for the Doctor here and bringing the silence, like the very last episode of last season. You heard this voice saying, you know, the silence is coming, you know. I think that's the Black Guardian from...
Oh, wow.
Who we saw in, like, the Key to Time episode with the Fourth Doctor.
Fifth Doctor.
Well, yeah, but with the Fourth Doctor as well, the Key to Time.
I missed that one.
Yeah.
I only saw him with the Fifth Doctor.
Yeah, the Black Guardian, like, brainwashed Turlough to try and kill the Peter Davison Doctor.
But I have also been schooled.
But also, Tom Baker had a run-in with the Black Guardian first. Like, the White Guardian shows up at the beginning of the season and says, you must find the Key to Time because the Black Guardian wants it. And I think the White Guardian turns out to be actually the Black Guardian who set the Doctor so the Black Guardian can rewrite all of creation to be evil. But when the White Guardian first shows up, the doors open and there's this golden light that pours into the TARDIS, and at first the Doctor thinks, oh, it's God, you know. And
so you think this whole season is leading back up to...
The Black Guardian.
Key to Time 2?
I don't know. I think...
Would be a surprise.
I think the Black Guardian is still trying to get rid of the Doctor because he's such a force for good. We'll see in another, what, 9 episodes, if I'm right or not?
Yeah.
Fifth one is on tonight, so we'll see.
Assuming the world is... still turning by then.
Yes.
We hope.
Well, if we're still around, you can tune in to our next episode, which is going to be on the recently released Thor.
So it'll be great.
It'll be monumental.
Yes. Thank you all for joining us for this first episode of Checking the Gate. I'm Michael M. Patty.
We'd like to give a special thanks to Matt Orley, who helped get our website set up. You can check our FAQ page to see what other movies we'll be covering in the future. For more information, please visit our website at www.ctgpodcast.com. You could also check us out on Twitter and on Facebook under Checking the Gate Podcast. And you could leave your comments at ctgpodcast@yahoo.com. So you could tell us if you like what we have to say, if you think we're full of hot air. We want to hear it, so let us know.
And, of course, film suggestions.
Yes, any kind of film suggestions. So shoot them our way. We will take all the suggestions you have. So until next time, this is Robert Wright Sasko.
And I'm Michael Patty.
And saying keep the faith.
Peace out.